the right time to stand up for freedom? Could it be when you start to feel creating children who'll inherit the pain and the debt of this nation and be slaves to the banks that cause hyperinflation? Who
imagines? And now live from the staging area for Freedom and Liberty in Spokane Valley, Washington, your host, Matt Shea.
Welcome to Patriot Radio. This is John Jacob Schmidt sitting in for Matt Shea. Thank you guys for allowing me to do this, and thank you, Matt, for trusting me to do this. It is always great to be in talking to this audience. What a great group of people. It was also such a blessing to be able to see so many of you this last weekend in Prosser, Washington. Thank you guys for your hospitality, and it's always great to be able to shake hands and meet so many of you. It's a rare opportunity. Matt Shea spoke, and of course, always keeps people's attention. So informative, and it just energized all of us. So I hope you guys were blessed by that. I know I was, and hopefully I can get to talk about that a little bit later on, if we have the time. This is the staging area for Freedom and Liberty, broadcasting live across Washington, Northeast Oregon, Northern Idaho, and streaming around the world. In the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And also, in the words of my good friend Matt Shea, our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we cannot end in prayer. We must also move to action. Prepare your horse for battle, but the battle is the Lord's, and this is the year for battle. Amen? Okay. If you are not already aware, you need to be following Patriot Radio US over on Facebook, if you are on Facebook. And also, remind your friends that they can listen live streaming if they're outside of the coverage area. Not an issue. No Patriot left behind. So not only can we broadcast live across the American Redoubt, we can also give the message of hope and encouragement into occupied territory for those that are feeling like they're surrounded on all sides. Well, and feeling alone, but you're not alone. Now let's get into the daily intelligence briefing from the front. International news. So this one is from the socialism is so awesome, we should try it sometime category in the news, from Town Hall. Venezuelans are now killing cats, dogs, and birds for food because socialism can't provide. Now, we've been following this situation in Venezuela, this looming economic collapse and just social breakdown, because of socialism, communism. It's one more example of a failed state right on the brink. As a result of this, basic necessities like toilet paper are being rationed and have been for quite some time. There's limited access to television and long-distance phone service, or in other words, any type of communications. There are rolling blackouts due to energy shortages, which they first said was to cut back to help reduce their carbon footprint. Everyone knew that was a lie. And now the government is cutting back on the work week, just 2 days for a government work week. This comes at a time when Venezuela's citizens need government services the most. Or do they? Government services got them into this in the first place. Supermarkets are not stocked regularly, so there's a food shortage. People are starving. They've resorted to looting to survive. You'd think that the government can't really afford to print its own currency because it's so broke. It would be the cherry on top of this socialist nightmare. Nope. The Hunger Games appear to have begun as Venezuelans are now hunting stray dogs, cats, and pigeons for sustenance. This is a really good one for us to follow because of the looming economic crisis that the economic experts are saying is inevitable in the United States, which really ties into this last weekend's Preparedness and Patriot Expo. urging citizens to become self-reliant so that you can still function and be a contributing member of your community, so you can help others and so you can help with the rebuilding process. It's kind of hard to do when you're starving, right? Now let's go to the other side of the pond, over to Europe. PamelaGeller.com has been bringing us continuous daily coverage of the al-Hijra, the invasion by Islam into Europe. It's the stuff that the CNN has been whitewashing from the news. Devout Muslims doing what devout Muslims do. And there was a stabbing, 4 stabbed, 1 dead, while he's screaming, "Infidel, you must die, Allahu Akbar." But get this, authorities said they found no links to any Islamic extremist network. So this is not really a valid threat, or we shouldn't jump on the, you know, Islamic bandwagon, because he's not tied to an extremist network. But I assert that he is. He's a member of the largest Islamic extremist network called Global Jihad. And in the meantime, in the West, we're losing our minds. MIT sponsored a presentation, and it's titled, this is from the Ecology and Justice Forum in Global Studies and Languages, presented a presentation titled, "Is Islamophobia Accelerating Global Warming?" You just heard that right. Sponsored by Global Studies in Languages, Global Borders Research Collaboration, MIT, Anthropology. And it's interesting because Pamela also adds in her article, as wild and as absurd as this educational event is, it's not that difficult to understand. Islamophobia is a myth. Global warming is a myth. So it stands to reason that these myths would be merged to produce an even bigger lie. Well, let's bring it back across, back over here to the United States. Very interesting news that broke from Superstation 95, 95.1 out of New York City. They cover some unconventional news and talking about getting into the story behind the story. There was a Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer who committed suicide. He spent a week writing the suicide note, took the length of that time writing his thoughts, exposing terrifying plans the government has for American citizens. The police department revealed to Superstation, a source within the police department revealed to Superstation 95 the contents of a suicide note found on the body, and they are utterly frightening, the article says. The note, which says it was written over the course of a full week in advance, outlines why the officer chose to shoot himself. And this is just one excerpt from that note. "The America I grew up in and cherished has been murdered by its own federal government. Our Constitution has become meaningless and our laws politicized so badly they are no longer enforced except for political purposes," the note said. It goes on to say, "Our elected officials are, to a person, utterly corrupt and completely devoid of any love or respect for the country which pays them. To them, everything is about getting and keeping power and making illicit money from backroom deals." 42-year-old Immigration and Customs Enforcement deportation officer shot himself after, and there's more to this, but after having been exposed to so many of these briefings, meetings, and the plans for American citizens in response to major catastrophic economic collapse and the ensuing societal breakdown. It's about controlling people. We talked about this weekend, how the government used to have, or our nation used to have, a program called the Civil Defense Program. Now it is continuity of government programs, specifically designed to ensure the survival of the government and control the people. It's about controlling the people, not helping the people get on their feet, not banding together as Americans to meet the challenge and get through it together and encourage Americans to be self-sufficient. No, they stop at 70, your 72-hour kit. You should have enough supplies to last for 72 hours until help can arrive, which oftentimes does not. And if you have more than that, well, then you're an extremist. You're a hoarder. Someone that should be watched very closely and probably part of the problem, part of the right-wing extremist category. Speaking of extremists, One News Now in North Carolina. You guys heard about this yesterday. North Carolina is suing the feds over the state LGBT law. And this is where the governor, and I found this article. I just put the hyperlink in my notes. But when I went to prepare for the show today, I clicked on the link, and it's a completely different article. Yesterday, it said the governor in North Carolina was suing to seek clarification from the federal government. That wording is gone now. This is what got me riled up, because here the state legislature passes a law saying these are the laws that we want in our state. And they get flack from the Department of Justice. And so the governor wants clarification from the federal government. That's a problem. That's a problem when states forget to assert their 10th Amendment state sovereignty and say it doesn't matter what the federal government, this is outside of the purview of the federal government's authority to say what laws we can and can't pass for the good of our own people. So the Justice Department set a Monday deadline. See, that was the wrong answer for the governor. Well, we need clarification on this human rights laws, discrimination laws. No. You don't go groveling to the federal government to audit itself on its policies. You simply say, we're a sovereign state, and these are our laws, and that's the way it goes. The Justice Department set a Monday deadline yesterday for the governor to report whether he would refuse to enforce the law that took effect in March. McCrory's defiance could risk funding for the state's university system and lead to protracted legal battle. So what is this holding funds? Who's going to hold funds? Well, according to Loretta Lynch, the Department of Justice is going to seek law enforcement action. What does that mean? How can the Department of Justice seek law enforcement action when that's outside the purview? That's outside of their jurisdiction. They're going to withhold funds. That's their law enforcement action. But see, it's Congress that holds the purse strings. They're the ones that determine what funding goes where, not the Department of Justice. I've got sound bites and all that I was going to get into. But Chris Ann Hall did an amazing job over at Liberty First. If you get a chance, go over to Liberty First. Or no, go to chrisannhall.com. K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E. H-A-L-L, chrisannhall.com, constitutional attorney. She takes this public press release by Loretta Lynch and shreds it, just annihilates almost every syllable of every word that came out of Loretta Lynch's mouth. Sometimes it's come so easy to do that kind of stuff, but the federal government is clearly overstepping its bounds in so many different areas. And one area in particular actually brings me right into our guest that I wanted to bring on for you today. Because there's something that patriots today need to carefully consider. And that is your privacy. That is your anonymity. In a world where the government is overstepping its reach, unconstitutionally authorizing itself to go into your lives, your computer, your email, harvesting all of this stuff. And not to mention that, there's also cybercrime. There's identity theft. There's so many vulnerabilities that we don't even fully comprehend, most of us. So in the spirit of looking out for my fellow patriots, I want to bring something to your attention and a guest. This guy is a subject matter expert on computer and internet security and anonymity. And we're going to talk about some things that are going to hopefully really pull back the veil and make you aware of some things and give you some action plans, some action items to be able to do something about it, to protect yourself, to protect your identity. So it's my pleasure to bring on Chris from Combat Studies Group. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, John.
All right. Hey, good to hear you. Thanks for coming
on the
radio. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there. This is really exciting. For those of you guys that don't know, I know there's less listeners in this audience that know exactly who you are, but let me just briefly introduce. Chris is a combat veteran. He's also the owner and instructor at CSG, Combat Studies Group, Inc. He's an overseas government contractor, wilderness medic. He's trained literally thousands of personnel from all four branches of the military, including special operations, federal agencies, police, and responsible citizens in firearms tactics and also this security, electronic security, computer and internet security and anonymity. So, Chris, thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Now, before we go any further, what can you tell us about your background or current work or previous work that that you do in this line of work? Let's kind of set that up first.
Well, in a nutshell, I spent 15 years in the military service. I kind of was all over the board. I initially was in signals intelligence. Then I was in military law enforcement. Then I decided to get into combat arms, and I finished up in the special operations community. I got out for a little while, and then I got a little bit restless and ended up spending the last 8 years with a federal organization working in the intelligence field on a contractual basis. And I've had this company going for about, 5-6 years, and it primarily was focused on, pistol work, rifle work, self-defense, CQB, things of that nature. And I'd always kind of been into the computer technology aspect of privacy, and privacy has always resonated very deeply with me. And it started to dawn on me just through interaction with my colleagues at work, that worked in that specific field in the intelligence community, that there were huge gaps in what they knew, especially when it pertained to their home life and how to secure their own personal life outside of the work environment. And so I put together this course, and it's really seems to be taken off. I think people are starting to realize that the concept of privacy is a cornerstone of liberty.
Absolutely. And you're talking about the Ground Rod Primer course, as it's called. And this is just foundational. You can go very deep into this. And, of course, I took the course 6 weeks ago. And I thought I knew a lot about, anonymity and security. And this just basically took it all to a whole new level. So for the listeners, where are the listeners in this audience most vulnerable and don't even realize it? What are the weak links in their privacy and their security as it pertains to emails and online and just computer activity in general?
Well, I think a lot of it is the human terrain. The fact that people are presented by the media and by the various outlets that, they get their information, that simply running an antivirus or maybe, using PGP encryption on their email is you know, protecting their identity from hackers, protecting them from government overreach. And really, that doesn't even scratch the surface of the threat. You know, for example, we found out that certain governments have been getting a hold of the firmware that goes into routers, you know, the access points that everyone has in their homes that they use to facilitate a connection to the internet, and they're actually backdooring that firmware. In fact, recently, I believe Senator Feinstein introduced a bill trying to make it so that end users could not change that firmware. So essentially, you know, locking that monopoly in place that the government would have to access their computers via their routers.
So you're talking about the wireless router that you would go down to, you know, any box store and to hook up to connect to the internet wirelessly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of impetus on, you know, securing your computer physically. People are starting to wake up to that fact and using encryption, and that's great. But they're kind of missing the point that there's that so-called man in the middle sitting right there in their house collecting on them. You know, so that's a big threat right there. And then, of course, you know, the very obvious one that I think a lot of people are starting to wake up to is the very operating systems they're running on their devices and on their computers are not engineered for privacy. In fact, quite the contrary, and especially in the last few years, there's been a concerted effort and a collusion behind the scenes between the likes of, you know, Microsoft and Apple, Android, with certain governments. And, you know, essentially backroom deals allowing them access should they desire it. You know, and I think it's safe to say a lot of this goes on without the benefit of a legal warrant, therefore making it an illegal action in and of itself. So, that you know, that's a concern right there.
Okay, so let's talk. And yeah, there's several things there I want to delve into. I've heard so many things from computer security specialists and IT guys. Stay away from Windows 10 if at all possible. It's nothing but a giant piece of spyware reporting back all your activity. So can you speak to that?
Yeah, and that's absolutely correct. You know, and it's not just Windows 10. Windows 10 kind of brought it to a whole new level. But this goes back to Windows 8. It goes back to Windows 7. And I think even Windows Vista is when they really started playing with that. And and it's important for people to realize, too, that, you know, Apple Incorporated got a lot of good press recently and kind of played, you know, the civil liberties hero by refusing to allow the FBI to, you know, force them into basically breaking their encryption protocols. But people got to realize Apple has a longstanding history of also giving up that information without even the benefit of a warrant. So
yeah, just asking.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's some smart PR on Apple's part, but don't be fooled. You really can't trust Apple products any more than you can trust Bill Gates products.
Sure.
And Android's really no different. One thing I will say about Android is Google took the Linux kernel and built, which is open source, and built their proprietary system on top of it. And so if you can manage to strip away those layers of Googleness, so to speak, you actually can build a safer product. Unfortunately, you can't do that with, you know, like iPads and iPhones because it's all closed source and proprietary. So there are actually a lot of options out there, and that's kind of what really pushed me to create the GroundRod program. To show people that, look, there's a big threat out there. You know, you've got these all-powerful agencies. Everyone is under the impression that they can break any encryption, they can bypass anything, they are all-powerful, and they propagate that belief. And what it does is it puts people in a state of apathy, and that is exactly where we cannot afford to be right now. You know, we need to be proactive.
Very true, and I definitely wanted to talk about that. You know, there's some recent developments that came out last week with the FBI and VPNs and Tor and stuff. But let me just kind of put that on hold right now. Let's go back to the access point, that weak link, the wireless router, for example, where you know, even with a password protection, with the back doors that they build into that. What can the listener do to ensure their privacy through, you know, using those routers to access the internet?
Well, quite frankly, they'll have to roll up their sleeves a little bit and do some research online. And let me pause there for a second. You know, one thing I hear a lot, especially on chat forums in the Patriot community, is this concept of meet space. You know, the only way to be safe is to talk face to face and, you know, just ignore the internet. Well, yeah. The problem with that is you're losing the best tool you have available to you. And so, you know, people can go online and they can actually teach themselves how to flash new firmware on their devices. You know, some of them are locked down, they can't do that, but some of them you can. I'm working on, you know, producing my own router, but you don't have to buy my product. You can do it yourself if you just do the research. You know, there's firmware out there that's built on open source code, built on a Linux kernel, and you can harden it up. And, you know, there's resources available out there to kind of walk you through that process if you're not afraid to give it a try.
Okay, and now... One other product is the VPN. This is what we're starting to hear more and more about, the virtual private network. So talk a little bit about that, why people are starting to gravitate toward using VPNs, or it's really, I guess, taking off now. And does that help you with privacy and snooping through your router?
Yeah, absolutely. And just a 10-second history on VPNs. You know, VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. It was initially something that was almost exclusively in the realm of the business world where, you know, someone working for, let's say, a big bank is on the road and they need to get a secure connection back to the mainframe at headquarters. A VPN is what accommodated the secure connection, you know, because obviously they need to protect their accounts and their proprietary information. So this has kind of morphed into a lot of services that are provided out there where the individual or the business can, you know, pay for the service and download the software and make a secure encrypted connection through the servers that this VPN company would provide them. And these servers are all over the world, and it not only encrypts your traffic entirely, but it also gives you a new IP address. And, you know, if you think of an IP address as your house address, it basically would tell someone on the other end who you are, essentially. And so that helps provide some anonymity there.
Excellent.
You know, and there's a caveat I got to throw out with VPNs, and that is because of some of the policies that are coming into effect with various Western governments primarily, you really have to look outside the U.S. and outside the U.K. And the Five Eyes when you're looking for a provider, because we now have things like FISA warrants, you know, secret court orders, where they can't even alert the customer that, hey, I have a warrant saying we need to collect your traffic.
Yeah, they don't have your knowledge.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate. You know, I've always been a Buy America First kind of person, and now I'm in a position where I can't. You know, I can't in good conscience say, hey, buy this American VPN, because they may make a fine product, you know, and one I can think of off the top of my head is PIA, Private Internet Access. They're an American-based company, and they do good work. They make a good product. The problem is you don't know if they've been ordered to spy on you or not.
Exactly, and overseas, yeah, these servers overseas that are hosting VPN services have extremely strict privacy laws that heavily scrutinize any type of, you know, government request for access, you gotta prove this person's involved in terrorism before they're going to let you get near their servers. And then even then, they're many times they're just getting access to encrypted data.
Correct. Yeah, and sometimes all that a government may have if they're actively collecting on someone is metadata. You know, those little fringe bits of data, the proverbial the stuff written on the envelope, if you're to use an analogy with mail.
Correct.
And that can actually tell them a lot, though. You know, it wasn't that long ago. We talked about this last time we saw each other. I think it was the National Security Director saying, we kill people based on metadata exclusively. And if you got to kind of let that sink in, that's a pretty scary concept, you know?
Well, a good example of that is Belgium terror, the bomber who they'd been looking for. I don't have his name right in front of me, but they were looking for him for, you know, a couple months, and they snatched somebody up who and got their cell phone, and they started pulling all the metadata. It was about the metadata, because that's how you find out. You know, they grab one guy one evening, and by sunup they got 20 other people arrested.
Right. I have to say, especially being a counterterrorist professional for pretty much my entire adult life, I'm all for catching the bad guys. However, it has to be done correctly. We have to respect the privacy and the rights, especially in our own country. You know, we have those safeguards in effect, and they have to be honored. It's not an optional thing. We can still do our job as counterterrorist professionals and abide by the law. I need to throw that point out there.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's disconcerting for many of us is some are redefining what a terrorist is.
Yeah.
And, so that's pretty alarming. Some of their descriptions of what they want to believe a terrorist is. And a lot of times they describe us or those in our communities and people that we look up to and trust and returning veterans and so on is bothersome.
Yeah. You've got stuff like the MIAC report,
Correct. Yeah. And another one too, not just the Missouri, but there was another one from a different state. They made those go away real quick. But, right. I remember when I took your course, there's one thing also that really jumped out at me as a weak link in people's security, and that's passwords. So can you address that?
Yeah. As I said in the class, for one, encryption does work. You know, as long as you're using good encryption, encryption does work. Now, the encryption is only as strong as the password. And again, there's, I kind of break it, the threat model down into the machine, the internet, and the human. And that human factor quite often is the biggest factor that breaks things that makes you vulnerable. And that password's a prime example. You know, I think probably everyone is guilty of reusing a password or using a short password or using a password that is a phrase or a word that actually pertains to something personal in their life. So all of these can be hacked pretty easily. It would take me about 5 minutes to hack, the 4-digit passphrase that everybody has on their phone that doesn't require state level, power.
Right. Now, okay. So most people have a Facebook account, email, PayPal, banking, Netflix. I mean, when you start looking at everything you have passwords for, there's 20 things. There's no possible way you can have a really great password for 20 different things and have 20 different passwords. So what are some of the tools that people can use to actually make more powerful passwords and to avoid having repetitive passwords?
What I found to work really well, and it has a pretty high convenience factor, which, unfortunately, being human beings, it is important because we're going to revert back to kind of that lazy side of ourselves and do what's easy and what we can easily remember. You know, I use a program called KeePass or KeePass X. It's an open source program, which you always, you know, whenever possible, want to use something open source because there's transparency in the code. If there's backdoors there, you can find it. You know, it's under watchful eyes. And so this program will help you generate strong passwords. It'll rate how strong they are. You can add human entropy, and so you're not just relying on the computer's, you know, pseudo random number generator, which, you know, let's face it, a machine is not by its nature chaotic. It's a device of logic. It's ones and zeros.
Correct.
And so a good program of that nature will allow you to, you know, wiggle the mouse around or just add chaos, and it will actually use that to seed the number pool and create, you know, true randomization. You know, and KeePass X will facilitate that. And they will store all your passwords in an encrypted vault with very, very high-level encryption, and you can actually store it so it's not just a master password that controls it, but it also needs a key file. Which could be any file, right? Oh. And I get that question a lot. And you know, you could make an argument that it would, except that so many people now are doing it, and the more the better, because you kind of just get lost in the noise.
Is what we call it.
Right, and you know, so this needs to happen. And the fact of the matter is, the tools work. If you learn how to use them properly, they do work. You know, and sometimes it doesn't take that much because, you know, frankly, a lot of us, we're just trying to retain the privacy over our personal lives. You know, we're not dealing with huge state secrets or anything. But, you know, to me, that's still really important. You know, this was developed for the quote-unquote good guys. That was developed by the Naval Research Lab. You know, by a mathematician and two computer scientists, for intelligence professionals.
Well, you know, some people also, they try to use that as a deterrent for not using things like Tor, the onion router, T-O-R, Tor, by saying, oh, man, you're going to use that. You're going to trust something that the DARPA and the CIA and NSA helped create. And I'm like, yeah, because... it works. I want to use the same tools they use.
Well, yeah, and that's a really salient point because we still use that stuff. You know, like I said, the quote-unquote good guys, we use that stuff to this day. You know, look at AES encryption, Advanced Encryption Standard. You know, that was the encryption chosen by NIST, you know, National Institute of Standards and Technology, as the bona fide, approved, government-mandated, you know, top-secret-level encryption protocol. And that's what we use. When I go to work, that's what we use. You know, and there's those people that are afraid to touch it because, oh, well, if the government touched it, it must be bad. It must be backdoored. Well, you know, there's other state-level adversaries out there that our government has to worry about. So they're not going to make weak encryption that they use. That doesn't make any sense.
Precisely. And there are a lot of people that want to shy away from it because that's Tor is something, you know, if you're a spy, well, you've got a really good excuse to use it. Otherwise, it's for, you know, pedophiles and child pornography and drug dealers and laundering money. And so I don't want any part of it. But, you know, there's a lot of actually the underground church in overseas are criminals in their country. And their lives depend on anonymity and encryption and using Tor and those type of tools. So you don't have to be an evil sexual predator to have a legitimate use for that type of, you know, security.
Right.
And, you know, who knows? We have a very uncertain future, possibly even in our own country. So it just might be a good idea for people to start thinking about learning something they never thought they'd need.
Right.
I'll just say
you know, look back to the Arab Spring and you know, when Egypt threw Mubarak out. They locked down the internet countrywide. The only information that was able to get out of the country was, guess what, via Tor. You know, so it's not even old history. This is stuff that, it plays into current events, and it saves people's lives, you know.
Absolutely. Now, over at Radio Free Redoubt, we just started a series, or we just finished a series, and we're in the middle of a project called the Underground Project. And one in particular was a series on going underground, and it was a hypothetical situation where, you know, what if the Chinese invaded, they declared all churches illegal, and your pastor had to go underground. How would you go about doing that? How would you securely communicate, you know, and still use the grid up infrastructure, you know, if it were still in place?
Right.
And so this really generated a lot of interest. It took off unexpectedly, has taken a lot more interest than I thought it would. So it's generated some questions from the listeners, and I wanted to pass those on to you to see if you mind fielding some of these.
Yeah.
One in particular, he says, my question is, once you set up all the encryption and the email and server, et cetera, what do you do with all the trails that you've left prior to that, your past, your public life that you, when you weren't careful, such as your subscriptions to podcasts, your old search engines, your previous Facebook account that you just recently deleted? Basically, how can you get rid of all the stuff you viewed prior to when you started being more secure?
Well, in a nutshell, it's a matter of discipline, because you've got to go back to what, you know, deep cover operatives, you know, back in the OSS started having to do. And that is, you know, if you picture your life as a car driving down a highway, you have to create a parallel highway and surreptitiously create another car also traveling on that other highway, if that makes sense. You have to create an insulated, separate identity, in a digital sense. So, you know, as far as like getting rid of your past on your current, you know, digital life, it's not going to happen. The internet is forever, they say. You know, there's no way to go collect all that stuff up.
Go ahead.
You just have to create that separate identity, and you can never, ever let them cross or touch at all.
Good answer. Yeah, because people don't realize, well, the stuff that young, foolish people are putting on the internet, that you cannot, it's forever. They actually have depositories where everything is stored that was previously on the internet.
Yep.
And and actually, what your response was excellent. It leads right into it. It may have actually already answered the next question. Is it possible to maintain two levels of identity on the net? I have many friends and family on Facebook. If that life is kept separate from the more private activities I wish to engage in on a more secure identity, do you think it's possible to separate the two, or are there too many spider webs connecting identities if we keep our social media presence active? You kind of answered that, but did you want to add any more to that, or did that trigger
any? Yeah, just to put a little bit finer point on it, yes, on the spider web concept, you know, there's all that the strings of metadata and those traffic analysis aspects that could link you possibly to your, you know, alter ego. You know, you've got to kind of take this Jekyll and Hyde approach, or, you know, Clark Kent Superman approach, however you want to frame it. And it really is a discipline issue. If you are absolutely disciplined and take it seriously and look at it as though your very life depended on it, you know, it needs that level of attention. You know, little things like hooking up to your home internet where your normal identity hooks up. Well, that's a violation right there. Even if you're using Tor or VPN, it still conceivably could be leaked back to you. You know, so that's a no-no. You know, talking... having the same friends that you're talking to the same acquaintances. You know, if I have a protected anonymous email account somewhere, you know, in, you know, the Seychelles Islands or something, and I link back to my own personal Gmail account, well, right there, you know, the gig is up. I may as well scrap it and start over.
Right.
You know, and that's how Ross Ulbricht from the Silk Road got rolled up, you know.
Oh, that was the Silk Road, the Tor website where he was selling prescription drugs over the internet.
Right, right. So he had this, he was kind of a libertarian-esque guy. He had a drug market, essentially, and I won't get into whether he was right or wrong or anything. It's not really germane to the argument. But he essentially had a hidden persona that ran this market. You know, he called himself the Dread Pirate Roberts, from The Princess Bride. And and the FBI was after him for a long time, and they didn't have a lot of luck catching him until they went back a couple years and found his actual identity with a Gmail address where he was asking someone some advice on, how to properly set up the store or something to that effect. And just from that little bit of metadata, they were able to start piecing things together, and then they started watching his place, and this is where the whole human thing comes in. And he had very poor tradecraft as far as what he physically did in the physical world, which, led to his eventual arrest.
Hmm. Okay. Now, you answered the one point that I was going to make is the algorithms. I know that they can build, when you try to use Tor and you're all anonymous, and then you go to your administration page on your website and you're checking your own Facebook, and it just points right back to you. So,
right.
We've got two things going here. We've got Tor, which is the onion router, which gives you anonymity. It masks your activities on the internet. It's like going into the mall. You go through the door, and then wherever you go inside, once you're inside the mall, you can't see from the outside. And then this is my understanding of it. And then you got a VPN, which creates a encrypted tunnel right from your computer all the way to the server in, let's say, Denmark. And the VPN that I use, I can select which country I want to appear to be, from.
Right.
It changes your IP and then double encrypts it again, and then you can go on about your business. So what's the difference between Tor and VPN? Is there one that's better, and why would you use one and not the other? How would you can you
that's a pretty hotly debated topic. There's fan clubs on both sides of that argument, but in point of fact, what I do is I use both, because that way I'm limiting the amount of trust I give each of those, methods. So I'll pump a VPN through Tor or Tor through a VPN and then back again. And again, using that layered approach where I'm not just giving my trust to this company that runs this VPN, because let's face it, you still, we want to have a trustless model, but we still have to extend a certain level of trust. Because I'm not physically at this place where these VPNs are, and I can't physically go in and check them and check their connections and look at their logs and make sure, they absolutely are legit. And so we have to just look at their model. We have to look at, I'll audit these companies. You want to have ones that have actually had good third-party audits. So someone's actually watching them.
Good.
There's a lot to it. It's a complex subject, and it's something that people got to start the learning process on now, because if they wait till the world's falling apart and things are really getting bad, they're not going to learn it, especially under that kind of stress,
Yeah, good. Practice now like it's real.
Yeah.
Now, before I let you go, because we're just about out of time, I definitely want to make sure that folks can get your website where they can learn more and maybe even look at that. I know that you've got a training schedule you're going to be out of the loop for a little while, but you do got some training coming up and resources as far as this stuff goes. So can you get that out there for the folks?
Yeah, the website is combatstudiesgroup.blogspot.com. If you just do a search for Combat Studies Group, you'll find it. I've actually got two websites. But, as far as the upcoming schedule, I've got a class in the Dallas-Fort Worth area this weekend. And that still has lots of open seats. I've got the last weekend of this month, I've got a course in Phoenix. And then the first weekend of June, I believe it's the 4th, 5th, I've got a course in Atlanta, Georgia. So, you know, if you're nearby any of those and you're interested, you know, just drop me a line through the website, and we can get you signed up.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, sir, very much. I appreciate your time. This is Chris from Combat Studies Group. Go and check his website out at combatstudiesgroup.blogspot.com and learn more. And, you know, I always tell people, if you want to learn something, YouTube is your friend. There are tutorials out there for setting up anything and everything you could ever hope to. So
that's true.
We'll continue to follow up. All right. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for being with us. God bless. And it was great to have you here with us on Patriot Radio.
All right. Thanks, John. God bless.
All right. Bye now. All right. So, folks, over at Radio Free Readout, we've been talking about this quite a bit. And I know that Matt Shea has really begun emphasizing the need for privacy among patriots, God-fearing patriots right now that are oftentimes in the crosshairs of this marginalization and demonization campaign, and sometimes even criminalization because of our views. It's not going to go away. It's not a temporary trend. It's only going to intensify. So hopefully we gave you guys a few things to think about. Well, plenty of resources over there. We'll update Patriot Radio Facebook just as soon as we're able to. I'll see if I can get that. And in the meantime, if we've got additional resources over at radiofreeredout.com. You guys have a great evening, and join us Thursday night. I'll be here this week and next week. So Thursday night right here at Patriot Radio. I'm John Jacob.
Patriot Radio is brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and airs every Tuesday and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. with a replay from 9 to 10 p.m. across the entire American Christian Network. Is a working one.